Probiotics can be an important part of your daily routine, and they certainly are a part of mine, but sometimes they are a hassle to take. Nature's Way Women's Probiotic Pearls are just what they sound like, adorable little pearls that couldn't be easier to take. They're tiny, but still pack a punch, supporting both digestive and vaginal health. To learn more, visit naturesway.com/pearls and use code CHELSEA10 at checkout for 10% off any Pearls probiotics. Terms and conditions apply, valid through July 31st.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results, made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at conairgirlbomb.com or a retailer near you.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Visit lisa.com/Chelsea to learn more. That's LEESA.com/Chelsea. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Chelsea. You were telling me you added some second shows in some cities. What do you have going on?
Okay, guys, I have added more second shows to my Little Big Bitch tour. I added second shows in Hollywood at the Pantages. I am going to be there two nights, October 12th and 13th. I added another show at the Chicago Theater, October 27th and October 28th, one of my favorite places to perform. I added another show in Portland. So I'll be there November 2nd and 3rd. And I added a second show in Boston at the Wang Center. So I will be there November 16th and 17th. I also have two shows in Seattle, San Francisco, New York at the Beacon, and Washington, D.C. I will be there October 5th. And sixth, and a special shout out to Phoenix, Arizona, where I'm coming Saturday, October 14th. And then I'm coming to Cleveland, Columbus, and Pittsburgh. So suck on that, you guys. I can't wait to see everybody. Oh, and I'm coming to Eugene, Oregon, too, everybody. That's November 9th, 2023. And I will be at the Clubhouse in East Hampton, which is going to be a very intimate show on Saturday, August 26th. So if you are in the Long Island area, that's where I'll be.
Awesome. Well, we have a great guest today, and she talks all about women and the patriarchy, and it's very exciting. But I have a question for you. You've talked about how, you know, your mom and your sisters were big influences in your life, but I'm curious, who are some other powerful women in your life, either growing up or early on, and what did they teach you?
I mean, I guess I would start with my third grade teacher, Mrs. Sheckman. Mm-hmm. She was a big influence on me because she loved me and she just showed me such like maternal love, and I went and stayed with her a couple times at her beach house with her husband, and my mom loved them, and she just really took me under her wing. Mm-hmm. I think she sensed how neglected I was, and she must have felt for me, and she was just so sweet. I still talk to her. I haven't talked to her in a few months, but she calls me every once in a while, and she lives in Florida, and she just extended love to me and tenderness, and I really— that made an impact on me to extend love and tenderness to others who I could see were neglected.
Yeah.
So and my mom was very much like that. My mom was very sweet to people when she knew they had issues, or even my girlfriend growing up was really in a bad home situation. Mm-hmm. And my mom sensed it, always told her she loved her because my friend's parents had never told her that they loved her. And so that was nice. But as far as powerful women, like, I don't know that anyone I looked up to, like the lessons I learned were powerful. I think I wanted to always be powerful because I didn't feel like enough women were in my life that were powerful. And it made me just as by instinct want to be more than what I was seeing. Like I was like, this isn't good enough. Why are all the I want to be like a boss bitch.
Right, right.
From a young age. And it's not even that I wanted to be. I just inherently was.
It was in your nature.
Like I just wanted to be in control of my own destiny, not reliant on anybody. And I think that's the always been the theme in my own experience is that I'm dependable. That's all I wanted to do because I saw so many people in my life that were not dependable in my mind. However, I interpreted my brother dying, my mom not picking me up from school, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to be dependable. And so growing up, that was always like, I wanted to be the friend. If you call me, I will be there. If you need me, I will be there. You know, you can always count on me. And that was more than the idea of power or looking to someone who, you know, in a powerful position. I just wanted to be a solid person.
Yeah, it's interesting because it sounds like you grew up knowing you wanted to be independent, but also be someone others could depend on.
Well said, Catherine. Great. Yes, that's it. That's exactly right. What about you? Who did you look up to?
I was really lucky where I grew up with a really great mom who sort of like brought in all kinds of other people. Like so many people in my life are like, your mom is like my mom, you know, like she's adopted everyone around her. But I also feel like I had so many other like friends' moms who were like a second mom to me. My best friend's mom always was like fun to talk to and interesting and like really wonderful and always had this like bubbly charismatic energy and cared what us kids had to say, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's such an important quality is just like listening and being interested. And she always was that for sure.
Yeah. I remember I had an uncle growing up and he was always interested in everything what the kids had to say. Like I remember loving going over to his house because he would spend time with me and be like, okay, tell me what you think about this. And I was such a young girl and I got so much attention from him. And then last summer we were all at our family vacation on Martha's Vineyard and some of our cousins came over. And then they told us that uncle had so many affairs growing up with all of his girlfriends. I was like, oh, he was probably hitting on me. I was like, well, you just blew that whole fucking memory that I had. Okay, so our guest today is the host of the podcast Pulling the Thread and author of On Our Best Behavior, Elise Lonin. Hi, Elise. Look who's here today. Hello.
This is exciting for me. You know I love you.
Oh, thank you, honey. And this is Catherine, my producer.
Hello.
And we are here to celebrate the launch of, I don't know why I'm holding this up like I'm Oprah Winfrey because I don't have a studio audience, but I guess I'm holding it up for Catherine, who's also read it, your new book, which is called On Our Best Behavior, The Seven Deadly Sins and the Price Women Pay to Be Good, which is a very important book for every woman and man to be reading. So that took me a while because it's a heavy book. Like there's a lot of information in there and a lot of history. I think you do a good job of really kind of bringing it back to yourself a lot and the ways that it's kind of imprinted itself in you and your experiences in this world. And I think all women should have to understand or should want to gain, I guess, a better understanding of where all of these ideas that we have about our responsibilities in society came from. And how many millennia they have been making their mark on us.
Yeah.
And what we are able to do as women to kind of take our own agency back and stop the art of performing for others.
Yes.
While also remaining true to who you are in the idea that by doing that, it even gives yourself more room to give. Like when we take care of ourselves, we are able to take care of others in a more impactful way. And if that's what we're trying to do in the first place is take care of everybody, then we should really start with ourselves.
Can you just do my book tour for me?
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I just need a ton of weed to constantly talk about the same thing. That's how I make things exciting is I add weed to it. And I'm like, okay, I can talk about this again. Because the book tour becomes very monotonous too. I know you have to repeat yourself a little. So talk to me and talk to us about your impetus for writing this book and tell us a little bit about all of your research and history.
Well, unsurprisingly, you may know this about me, but I am a good girl. I have spent my life achieving and trying to be the best at everything in every sphere of my life. And I hit a point several years ago where I have a recurring panic disorder. I am a chronic hyperventilator. And I hyperventilated for more than a month and just hit a wall of trying to understand what it was in me that was driving me to try to reach some invisible finish line where I would have safety and security and be loved and be enough. And I recognized, despite everything that I had achieved and how much I had done for other people, my family, my coworkers, that I was only driving myself deeper into a hole. I was the farthest I'd ever felt from emotionally free or comfortable. And so I knew I needed to address this, whatever it was in me, these invisible voices that were telling me that I was bad, that I wasn't enough. And that sort of began the journey of what would it look like to actually turn and face this rather than trying to continue to outrun it. And in that process, I came across this code of goodness that is so obvious, it's invisible, I think, to all of us. And this punch card of goodness that women specifically try to fulfill in our culture, regardless of whether you're raised in any religion or know anything about religion, these are cultural rules at this point. And if you actually don't achieve them, you deny them. Sloth, pride, envy, gluttony, greed.
Because we're trained
lust,
that they're so
anger.
Bad, right? To practice any of these things.
Yes. That I recognized in that all the ways that I was policing myself and, sadly, policing other women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, that very much struck a chord with me when you're talking about the judgment we have. I'm a very judgmental person, so I struggle with this a lot because I'm always trying to just go at everybody with love and no judgment. But I'm so opinionated, so it's just a fucking pain in the ass. But it's not fair to judge everybody. It's not fair to judge anybody. You're supposed to be looking at people with sympathy and compassion and empathy and no judgment. I mean, I can't wait to one day feel that, you know, for more than a couple of fleeting seconds. So talk to me how you recognize that in yourself.
Yeah. Well, the big question that I feel like I've been circling for most of my adult life, definitely since 2016 and the election, is why do women have so much trouble getting on side with each other? What is it in us that makes us so, it feels instinctual. I don't think it's instinctual. I think it's culture. But why do we slap each other down? And why is it so acceptable to dismiss each other with comments like, I just don't like her, or who does she think she is, or she's too big for her britches. And these are all cultural refrains we've said, we've heard. Most likely we haven't interrupted them in ourselves and in conversation with each other. And I really wanted to understand that in myself. Why did I have that reaction to specific women, not all women? And what I realized, I sort of started with envy. It's the gateway drug. I realized that those women that were bothering me were women who were pushing on a dream I had for myself. And they had something. It was envy. They had something that I wanted for myself. And I just couldn't actually admit my own wanting or acknowledge it. And I think we're all conditioned to suppress it. It comes up and we suppress that wanting and we just attack. That's what I think is happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's a great way to describe it because you can, I mean, anyone listening to this can relate to feeling envious of another person and then what those feelings bring up for you are that you're supposed to shove them away. And it's like, that's actually part of your psyche, or you can call it your shadow self or whatever you want to refer to it as. But those are natural thoughts that happen. And it's your job to put them in the right compartment.
Yes.
You know, not to act on them, not to behave in a jealous way or behave in an envious way, but to acknowledge. I mean, or you can. I mean, it's really up to how you want to play this game of of life. It's like, how do you want to operate within all of these dynamics? And self-agency and self-respect allow you to acknowledge that you even have those feelings, and they're not the most powerful feeling.
Yes.
Or what that feeling leads to, which is a truth that you're not willing yet to admit to yourself.
Yes.
Which is, I want that.
1,000%. It's full of really essential information. I think that our envy is our soul knocking on a door, asking us to pay attention to what we want. And in our culture, unfortunately, women have been conditioned to subjugate what we want to other people's needs. It's just being a woman 101. We don't have great models culturally of identifying what you want and then going after it. And there aren't that many women. Also, culturally, you, I'm sure, can relate to this, and I write about this in the chapter on pride. We don't have very many examples of highly visible women, women who have dared to be seen, women who are really living their dream, who have managed to escape cultural destruction, right? Like, so many women, business leaders, athletes, actresses, singers follow this trajectory where we love them when they're coming out, we applaud them, we celebrate them, they reach a certain pinnacle, and then we destroy them. And we can say that those people have nothing to do with us, like people like you and me, Catherine. We can say, oh, that we can get a little hit of Schadenfreude or just find it kind of entertaining. But the reality is that is lives in us too. It lives in all young girls. This is a playbook. This is what happens to women. And when we celebrate it, we're inhibiting ourselves from being seen too. It has really, really deep implications, I think, for all women.
Yes, it's something that it would be nice to have a language for young little girls, you know, and boys, everybody really, because who doesn't get envious of another person's accomplishments? But there's this dismantling that needs to be done about the way that we're taught about those feelings and all the seven deadly sins that we're not supposed to feel. I mean, it basically, your book speaks to the fact that patriarchy was invented with religion. You're not saying that, but that's what I'm saying. That's where all of everything started to get murky. And even in this book I read, A Short History on Humanity, a few weeks ago, and that goes back to like 2 million years ago, and it goes back to when civilization began and the migration pattern, and it starts to understand when women became property because of burial sites. Like, you can see that there was a change in civilization, and when it's what started out equally ended up being subjugated. And that was definitely because of religion.
Yeah. Well, and I would say, I take that one step farther and say you have sort of the Hammurabi's code, this for early patriarchal ideology, which was all about destroying women, like drowning women and penalizing men slightly with like a slap in the hand. And then you, when
or a
you
hand
went,
job.
Yeah, or a hand job.
That's
exactly.
Your that's
job
yeah.
If you really transgress.
The penal code.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, Catherine. But then with Judeo-Christian religion, when Rome just really taking over, you see this moralizing that comes into it as well. So it's not just about oppressive dominance, subjugation of women. It's about you are bad and base, and maybe you'll make it to heaven if you spend your life trying to prove your goodness.
Well, interestingly enough, there's also evidence to show or direct you to the idea that this is one stage of civilization. And then so it started out with matriarchy, then went to patriarchy. And then the next stage, it could be, as some conjecture, will be androgyny.
Yes. Isn't that, I love this idea.
I also love this idea.
Yeah. And I feel like that's what the contemporary trans movement is moving us toward, this idea of transcending gender and gender identities and living balanced between energies, the masculine and the feminine. Regardless of gender, we all have both energies. I think women can really identify with this. The masculine being order, structure, truth, when you're directing, when you're organizing, when you're making stuff happen. The feminine is nurturance, care, creativity. And men have feminine energy and desperately need to be living that in their lives, fully in the creative, nurturance, caring component of self. And so I think with the trans movement, we're seeing, like, it doesn't matter what your body parts are. These are universal human values, and it is incumbent on all of us to be balanced in both.
And imagine the lack of gender discrimination when there is no gender.
Yeah.
Like, hello, that's what we need to, like, I mean, there's so many advantages to understanding this movement and learning about this movement instead of rejecting it because you only think there's a boy and a girl, which is so dumb. In certain places in the world, they already have a third sex, you know? So that makes sense, and knowing that everything is a spectrum also. I think it's really fascinating to understand that and how, you know, in our conditioning and what you're supposed to do, even with the little decisions in our lives every single day and the minutiae, we do what everybody else is doing most of the time without having our own original ideas or thoughts about counteracting that kind of behavior or making a decision not based on what other people made their decision on.
Yes. No, and I think, like, you, for example, to me are a sort of a post-patriarchal person, and you're an incredibly good interrupter of this programming that runs in us. I feel like you have a ability to sort of stop it and question it and evaluate it and then take it or leave it in a way that I think the rest of us need to develop. This ability to sort of say, is this what's running me? Is this me? Mm. Or is this just some sort of conditioning that is informing my behavior? And if we could do that and get closer to ourselves and say, yes, I'm a woman and I'm a mother, or in your case, not a mother, that doesn't mean that I am, that identity defines me, that I am only those things. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a lot of trouble with sort of the complexity. We really want women to be only caring and nurturing, and men to only be this. And it's a cage. It's a terrible cage.
Moms are more than the stuff they do for us. The laundry, cooking, and driving. And by the way, Dad should be helping with that stuff too. She's got a whole life outside of motherhood. This Mother's Day, give mom her flowers. She deserves the best, and that's why Bouqs is giving you 25% off your entire order of farm fresh flowers from Bouqs. That's short for bouquets. Here's what's great about the Bouqs company. Bouqs is different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano. Bouqs has modern designs and unique flowers that you cannot find anywhere else. Bouqs is simple. Go online, pick the delivery date, and you are done. Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mother. Order your Bouqs now. And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma. So go to Bouqs.com and use promo code Chelsea, C-H-E-L-S-E-A, for 25% off. That's Bouqs.com, promo code Chelsea.
Tired of hair removal tools that just don't cut it? Conair Girl Bomb gives you smooth, flawless results while putting you firmly in control. From achieving that silky smooth skin to boosting your inner confidence, Conair Girl Bomb is all about helping you elevate your self-care game. Whether it's creating a hype playlist, throwing yourself into a hobby, or scheduling some me time, self-care is important to keeping you feeling confident and empowered. It's time to take your hair removal routine to the next level. You can trust Conair Girl Bomb to get the job done right. Conair Girl Bomb gives you the secret weapons for achieving powerful results with ease. Designed with women in mind, these tools boast the Sassy Girl Bomb Grip for unparalleled handling and precision, along with professional-grade blades to deliver results that you used to only get from men's tools. No more compromising. So, to all you incredible women out there, treat yourself to a little Conair Girl Bomb magic. Don't settle for anything less than perfection. Elevate your grooming game with Conair Girl Bomb. Available now at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Lisa and home design icon West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of the two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary, indulges your senses, and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Lisa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and
families have a safe place to sleep. Visit lisa.com/Chelsea to learn more. That's LEESA.com/Chelsea.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
What were you saying, Catherine? You were saying something about her book before when we were talking.
Yeah,
about it.
I was telling Chelsea, you know, one of the most meaningful parts of your book was that first introductory portion where you're talking about the history of where patriarchy comes from, having grown up very religious and basically going to church 7 days a week between school and church on Sundays.
I'm so sorry that happened to you.
Thank you. I've been spending the last couple of years sort of dismantling a lot of this stuff and being able to see where this stuff comes from, you know, that Mary Magdalene was, you know, called a prostitute, even though that was like maybe not what was going on.
That wasn't what was going on, right?
Right. She was exonerated by the Pope a couple of years ago, but like the damage is already done. But like between your book, it's like when you see these things, when you read these things, your eyes are opened to like, oh, here's what's these thoughts are coming up in me. And they're just, it doesn't mean they're true just because they're coming up.
Yes.
It's because of something I learned when I was very young that's maybe based on nothing.
Yes. My friend calls it Bible fanfic.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the deadly sins weren't in the Bible. And
right.
I think most people never make that connection. It just, these things are passed down to us like law. And when you actually start to look at, and you look at something like the New Testament, and we could nerd out on it, but just the number of mistranslations of the New Testament are higher than the number of words. And like some devastating ones, you know, like the creation of virginity was a translation from Hebrew to Greek. And Beulah means young woman. It has nothing to do with sexual state. That's the original Hebrew word. Has nothing to do with whether you're married or not. Just means young woman. That was translated as virgin.
Mm. Wow.
Nice. Thanks for that.
It's great.
Wow. Could you also talk a little bit about, I know in your book you include sadness, which was originally one of the seven deadly sins. There were eight. Can you talk a little bit about that?
When did they cut that one?
It just fell off the
list.
Wasn't
convenient.
So the briefly, the history is that they were called eight thoughts, as you said, demonic thoughts, but demon meaning distraction. And they were first written down by this.
By the way, Elise speaks fluent Latin, so watch your back.
Uh-oh.
Oh, God. So they were first written down by this monk in the Egyptian desert, Evagrius Ponticus, as eight thoughts. And these distracting thoughts, they didn't have this moral tone. This is at the same time that the New Testament was being canonized. This is 4th century. And this little chapbook, he wrote it as like a spell book almost, of pits of scripture. It was passed around, and then it wasn't until 590 that Pope Gregory I turned these thoughts. He dropped sadness, and he turned the thoughts into the cardinal vices, the seven deadly sins. And it, as you said, Catherine, in that same homily, he assigned them all to Mary Magdalene, conflated her with a woman who anointed Jesus's hair and turned that woman into a prostitute. So that's when Mary Magdalene miraculously became a prostitute. And that's how they entered sort of mainstream religion. And sadness, we don't know why it went away. The way that Evagrius Ponticus wrote about it.
They probably abolished it.
They abolished it, exactly. So it had a feminine soul. And so I think it fell off because these were assigned primarily to women. And I really wanted to include it in the book because I feel like our culture is drenched in grief. And I think sadness, fear of sadness, is lodged primarily in the minds of men. And that being cut off from our feelings, the primary symptom of that is toxic masculinity and this inability to experience grief and to cycle and allow death is why we're all so screwed.
Even guys that are really sweet that don't have the vocabulary to talk about this stuff end up having toxic masculinity episodes when they are challenged with a difficult conversation, or they don't understand it because they think they're, you know, they don't have the, it's like there's like a major disconnect. And I think in the book, what you also talk about very necessarily is even women are conditioned to push their boys to grow up and be men and act tough because there's a certain age where, you know, the cuddling is diminished and the kids start to understand that maybe holding my mommy's hand isn't what a big boy does. And then they're not coming to you for comfort and they're not having emotional outbursts anymore because they're told that's not what little boys or big boys do.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's this idea, this cultural remnant that we have to turn boys into men. And you don't hear that about women and girls, but there is this masculinization, this pulling them away from their mothers, that if you don't do that, they'll be, enmeshed or entrapped. And this, the science actually shows that little baby boys are more feeling, have more attachment than girls. And so it is a horrible crime, the way that so many boys, and I feel like it's getting better, but we think about our generation and a lot of empathy for that severing and that severance. And it goes beyond family, right? This is all cultural. We enforce this with each other. So you're mocked on the playground for crying. You learn fast, right, to not do that.
And I love that you conflate toxic masculinity with like keeping men away from those feelings of sadness, because what do we do when we're having an argument? We use anger as like a shield from what's really underneath, which is hurt and sadness. You know, that's why like so often you might be upset or, you know, shouting or whatever. And what's really underneath there when you actually get to it is tears. It's crying. It's, you know, it's the hurt underneath.
Yes, 1,000%. Anger is often secondary to grief, shame, fear. And anger is also essential and animating, but it can often be a protective, a piece of armor.
But it's also not useful. Right. Maybe at times it may seem useful, like coming from somebody who's naturally pretty angry. it seemed useful for a long time, but it is not the way to make my point anymore. And I understand that. Calm, collected, and thoughtful yields a much better result.
And don't you think, though, that you have learned over time to metabolize your anger, process it, listen to it? You don't just suppress it.
No. And usually I'm not angry when I have any time to think about anything.
Yeah.
When you do skip the anger part, or you get past the anger part and you get to that vulnerability and that hurt, like that's where resolution can come. That's the only place resolution can come, is when you're honest with whatever the hurt is.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do think we're so hard culturally on angry women. And so many women are swallowing it, their resentment, frustration, rage.
Oh, and yeah. My friend used to be like, you are so rage. She's like, why are you so angry? I'm like, you're more angry than me. I'm just saying it. And you're fucking suppressing it and talking shit about everybody behind their back. What is that? That's a more honorable way to live?
Yes. Well, and this is our conditioning. I mean, you might be, again, like an example for all of us of how to live beyond these sins. But boys and girls have a lot of aggression. It's very natural and very human. And boys, we let them express it physically and verbally. And girls, we don't. We don't teach any kids proper conflict resolution or how to have healthy conflict, which is an essential life skill. But girls are taught that they shouldn't be angry. It's not feminine. It's inappropriate. And so it comes out sideways. Gossip, alliance building, backstabbing, exclusion.
Triangulation.
It's killing us. And then what's most painful about that is that it's then ascribed to us as our natural instinct. Like this
That's how you are.
That's how you are. And it's, no, we're just not interrupting these cycles and talking about learning how to talk about our feelings and our aggression and our frustration openly and productively.
I heard this couple talking on Instagram, this older couple talking about their child coming forward about, you know, being born a boy but identifying as a girl from the time she was a little girl, and her parents resisting this, and, you know, their church going, and they believed everything in church and that it was a phase and that they could, you know, they just ignored her. And the mother had something really powerful to say about when she finally was able to accept it and sit down and hear her, which I think is really what it comes down to, is everybody being seen and heard. When you are heard by the people that love you, like, that sets you off on the road to love and acceptance. It sets you up for success to be accepted by your parents and loved and encouraged no matter what you are, just for that embrace. And the rejection of that sets you on a road that can be irreparable.
Yes.
And this woman said, as soon as I accepted what my child was telling me, and as soon as I sat down and listened to her, and my husband and I stopped fighting and just started hearing, she goes, the love that my daughter had, like, lit her up. She goes, she felt so loved by us, and her whole energy and dynamic changed, and she finally was, like, happy and joyful just by the act of her parents accepting.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's so powerful, and that's all that any of us want, is to be seen, heard, but more intensely understood, I think.
Yeah, not labeled, understood, you know? And this is a conversation that came up around that video, because I watched it with a friend of mine, and she was like, I said, don't you think most people's fear about their children being trans is that they're going to endure all this abuse, and that they're, you know, they're going to be subjected to such discrimination and, you know, bad behavior? And she said, no, I think some parents, that a parent's outlook should be, oh, no, I'm going to make sure that everybody knows as much as they know about this, and I'm going to protect you, and I'm going to be there right by your side. Yeah. That's the way they could be looking at it. And I thought, oh, wow, yeah, that is right.
Yeah. No, and I'm sure it's a whole wash. I mean, my brother is gay, and we grew up in Montana, and I remember when he came out, it was right around Matthew Shepard, right? And so my parents, who are really progressive, we all knew, right? But a big part of it was major understandable fear about what would happen to Ben in the wider world. And he didn't say it in Montana.
Oh, well, of course he didn't say it in Montana. Why would you? I wouldn't go to Montana.
Hey, Montana's beautiful.
I think I just performed there, by the way, actually. So I guess I do just go there.
You were in Spokane, I think. That's where I did my back to school shopping.
Oh, right.
Right on the other side of the path.
Okay, well, we are going to have some callers. Catherine, are you going to giddy us up for this episode?
Yes. We've got some overwhelmed moms. We've got some people who need love advice. We've got some cheating boyfriends. We've got a lot of different stuff, and it all kind of relates to the patriarchy. So
great.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Elise and Chelsea.
Moms are more than the stuff they do for us. The laundry, cooking, and driving. And by the way, Dad should be helping with that stuff too. She's got a whole life outside of motherhood. This Mother's Day, give Mom her flowers. She deserves the best, and that's why Bouqs is giving you 25% off your entire order of farm-fresh flowers from Bouqs. That's short for bouquets. Here's what's great about the Bouqs company. Bouqs is different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano. Bouqs has modern designs and unique flowers that you cannot find anywhere else. Bouqs is simple. Go online, pick the delivery date, and you are done. Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mother. Order your Bouqs now. And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma. So go to Bouqs.com and use promo code Chelsea, C-H-E-L-S-E-A, for 25% off. That's Bouqs.com, promo code Chelsea.
Tired of hair removal tools that just don't cut it? Conair Girl Bomb gives you smooth, flawless results while putting you firmly in control. From achieving that silky smooth skin to boosting your inner confidence, Conair Girl Bomb is all about helping you elevate your self-care game. Whether it's creating a hype playlist, throwing yourself into a hobby, or scheduling some me time, self-care is important to keeping you feeling confident and empowered. It's time to take your hair removal routine to the next level. You can trust Conair Girl Bomb to get the job done right. Conair Girl Bomb gives you the secret weapons for achieving powerful results with ease. Designed with women in mind, these tools boast the Sassy Girl Bomb Grip for unparalleled handling and precision, along with professional-grade blades to deliver results that you used to only get from men's tools. No more compromising. So, to all you incredible women out there, treat yourself to a little Conair Girl Bomb magic. Don't settle for anything less than perfection. Elevate your grooming game with Conair Girl Bomb. Available now at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
We all know how important it is to get a good night's sleep. I know that if I don't sleep for 8 hours a night, I am not as sharp.
From memory foam mattresses that hug in all the right places to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support at every price point. Leesa's Sapira Hybrid has been named Wirecutter's best hybrid mattress 5 years running, and collectively, their mattresses have over 20,000 five-star reviews. Delivery is free, returns are easy, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses, plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/Chelsea for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. LEESA.com/Chelsea.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back.
We're back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our first question comes from Carter. Carter writes, Dear Chelsea, for the last 8 years, I've devoted most of my time and energy to my career and family. My parents and my sibling depend on me for emotional and often financial support, which puts me under immense pressure. Feeling stretched thin has become normal for me, and I realized that I haven't had any real fun in a very long time. I'm 32, single, and way too responsible for my age. How do I start to bring joy back into my life? What are some easy ways to begin to make joy a habit? Thank you both for the wisdom you share on the podcast, Carter.
To practice joy? Well, I guess that is a practice. But once you get it, you have it. So you got to start practicing because it is a practice. It's like, for my practice is patience. I have to practice that. I have to practice that. And now it's coming much more naturally. I think joy is about finding what brings you the joy. Like what lightens you up where you feel kind of tingly? Like, is it nature? Is it exercise? Is it work? Is it reading? Like, what is your passion? You have to identify certain passions that you have. And I think when you realize, you know, you don't have to be good at a million different things or like a million different things. Like you can be drawn to two or three things, but make them a bigger part of your life. Like if you're an artist, you need to create. But I think if you're having trouble finding joy, then I think instead of looking harder, I would actually advise you to just be a little bit lighter about it and take note of yourself, like be in your body a little bit more and see what brings you joy, because that's what you have to surround your day around. You know, like I love to read books. I need to read at least like an hour or 2 hours a day. That brings me deep satisfaction and sometimes joy, but sometimes, you know, it's heavier stuff. Like reading your book was so informational and so helpful, but I came away with such a bigger breadth of knowledge than I had started your book with. So worthwhile. But I think that's what you have to find out about yourself. But that's me sounding off. What do you have to say, Elise?
Well, I'm glad to hear Carter use the word joy, because I think in our culture, we're taught to look for happiness as a steady state, which drives me crazy.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. That's stupid. Yes. Also, I want to say that. Yeah. It's impossible to be happy all the time. Yes. Joy is something separate than happiness.
It is. And it's, I think joy can be brief, fleeting. It is that, you know, Catherine's laugh. It is
overwhelming gratitude for something in your life that can bring you joy.
Yes. Just that sort of, it can be 5 seconds. But I think that that's where you start, and finding those moments where you do laugh out loud or you have a nice moment with a barista is a great place to start. And that's the reality of our lives, ups, downs, that sort of emotional durability. So that's great that Carter wants joy and not happiness, because we all need to unplug from the toxic positivity that's fed to us.
Toxic positivity. Mm. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Some people are really annoying with that.
Yeah. And I think because it's hard, it sounds like things are hard for Carter. You understand the underside. And so just developing the upside, sort of what you were talking about, Chelsea, just a great song, a quick walk, reminds you of what it is to have that full emotional expression.
Yeah. And also to recognize it, you know, take your time throughout your day to recognize what are the things that perk you up, even if it's your coffee in the morning. When you have that moment and you sit with that moment and experience it, like even the littlest of joys, they start to kind of multiply. And then you start to understand and enjoy more and more of them. So just pay attention to what you're feeling and thinking for the next few days and pinpoint some of the things that bring that feeling into your life.
Yeah, I think it goes right back to what Elise and Chelsea were saying at the beginning of the episode, which is you can't pour from an empty cup. So if you're giving all of this to your family, to your friends, to whoever else needs stuff from you, you actually have to do what you need for you first.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, Carter, thank you for writing in and let us know what solutions you find to give you
good
more
luck,
joy in
Carter.
Your days. Yes. We have our first caller. This is Emily, and she's in her late 20s.
Is it Emily Dickinson?
It is. She's alive.
I told her. She texted me earlier. I told her to call in.
Good.
We're on the text thread.
Well, she writes, "Dear Chelsea, I'm writing in because I need some powerful woman love and advice. I just found out my boyfriend of a year has been dating another girl almost the entire time. I found photos in his phone of them together, not snooping, and it makes me sick to my stomach. She's trashy, and she knew about me, which makes them both disgusting. We were planning our future together. We were talking about having babies and getting married, and he was with her the whole time."
Gross.
Yeah. He would go on trips with her and tell me it was a boys' weekend or he was out with his family. I need some advice on how to move on from this and get my power back. And yes, I dumped his ass, but my heart is broken and I can't stop picturing them together. Cheers, Emily.
Oh,
Emily.
Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Hi, this is our guest, Elise. Say hi to Elise and Catherine.
Hello, nice to meet you.
I'm so sorry, honey. That is such a betrayal. Like, ew, that makes me so, I can't even imagine how painful that must be for you.
Yeah, I was very, very shocked. And he gave me no warning signs at all. Like, I never went through his phone. Like, he never gave me any suspicion. So I was pretty shocked. He also gave me a fake Instagram account that said it was her and it wasn't her. So I actually ended up finding out who it actually was. And they've been seeing each other for a couple months now. So, yeah, I was pretty shocked, to be honest.
And so what did he do when you confronted him?
Oh, he gaslit me quite a bit. I was like, who is this girl? And he said that it was his ex from 6 years ago. And he randomly ran into her at Harrison Hot Springs together. So I did some more ding. And he was like, I knew that you would do this. I know that you would do this. And it was the you use that he got me. Like, I knew that you would go to Instagram and find this out, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it makes no fucking sense. Like, who is she? Just fucking tell me who she is, you know? And I was just shocked.
Yeah, no, that's traumatizing to have somebody lie to you on that kind of level.
Yeah.
It's a deep betrayal.
Are you in therapy?
No. And I listen to your podcast all the time. I know you love therapy. I've never been to therapy.
You need to go.
I know.
You need to go because, like, that's a terrible thing to have happen to you. That's a major betrayal of trust. And in order to work through that in a healthy, really adult way so that you get through it sooner and you're not holding on to resentment 3 or 4 years down the line, you need somebody, like, a really solid professional to talk you through this on a regular, consistent level, because nobody deserves to be treated like that, including yourself. Obviously, you know that because you broke up with him. So that's the first best news, is that you broke up with him and that you have enough a strong enough sense of yourself to know that that's not acceptable to you.
For sure.
Great for doing that. Good for you. It's hard to break up with somebody when you love them, but, like, you stood up for yourself and you respect yourself. So, like, you're already on your road to recovery just by that action.
Yeah. No, I ripped up his orchid he got me. I put all his love letters and I put it on a box on my patio and said, get your shit. So
good.
I'm doing a lot better. I'm in school right now to be a teacher. So I'm just focusing on that. And I'm getting back into running and stuff. So I'm doing a lot better. But I do think I should probably go to therapy. You're right.
Yeah. Because you also need to restore trust in yourself. And betrayal is hard in that you think that you should have seen something or known something that was being held from you. So you need to primarily restore your own faith and your intuition and your sense. And then I heard you also say, it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And so as you heal, part of it is to disconnect from him energetically and to stop trying to figure it out or justify it or wonder what you missed. And it takes a lot of self-control to interrupt that, but you're not going to figure it out. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
It's not your problem, really. Anybody that duplicitous isn't your problem. Like, he's a liar. You've excised him from your life, and like, it doesn't matter. And you picturing him with that girl also doesn't matter. Who gives a shit? Thank God you're not fucking with him. Thank God.
Yes.
Like, she did you a fucking huge solid. So reframe the way you're looking at that.
Divine intervention.
Yeah. I even messaged her on Instagram and I said, well, like, girl to girl, can you just tell me? And she just blocked me. So I'm like, you can have him, honey. He's yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know what they say? If you wind up with the guy you were like having an affair with, you are just creating a job opportunity. So, you know,
I think that you are like a great example of somebody getting through a relationship. I mean, listen, you still should go to therapy. Absolutely. But you seem very solid. And like, this is good for women to be hearing that you're already through the thick of it in a short amount of time and that you are identifying all of this kind of self-awareness.
Yeah. No, I let myself cry for a couple of days and then I was like, screw this. Like, I'm getting back on my shit. I wrote into you. I talked to my mom. I talked to my friends. Like, I have a really good circle. So it sucked, you know?
Yeah, no, it does suck. And like, listen, that sucked. And hopefully that will never happen to you again.
No, it won't. Hopefully. I mean, I won't laugh.
Yeah.
I'm just confused at how I didn't see it, but.
But that doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You can't see things when you're in them. Don't self-flagellate or blame yourself for not identifying a situation as it was. Like, it may not have been that way the whole time. It may have been that, you know, it may have developed. Like, it doesn't matter either. That doesn't matter either. All you have to know is moving forward, like, what you're willing to tolerate and what you aren't. And you already said that to the world by breaking up with him, mm-hmm. which is, again, a strong move. And you're headed already in the right direction.
Yeah. And don't go forward defended. So do whatever you can to heal that so that you can go through life heart open.
Yes.
Yeah. No, you're right. I'm just dedicating this summer to me and only me and all of my goals and what I want to do. So.
Oh, love it. Okay. Well, take care. Thank you so much for calling in and best of luck to you. We're sending you total good vibes.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Emily.
Bye, Emily.
Bye.
That goes right back to what we were talking about before with right now she's in the anger part and she's in the like, fuck that guy, whatever. Like, that's where she's at right now. And, you know, getting into therapy to get past that a little bit and into the hurt, processing the hurt, like that will help her not carry it with her.
Yes.
Well, should we jump to another caller?
Yeah.
Our next caller is Amy. She is 34. Dear Chelsea. First of all, I adore you both. I'm writing in because I probably need a swift kick in the rear. I'm a former high school teacher who left the profession after 10 years, feeling completely beaten down by the demands of the overall system of what we like to call public education.
Ugh, God, I don't fucking blame you. What a joke.
I have since focused on my two young children who are 4 and 22 months. I love being a stay-at-home mom, but eventually, sooner rather than later, I would love to go back to work. One career path I can't seem to get out of my head is to be a personal trainer. More specifically, a coach at Orange Theory Fitness. I've been attending this gym for about 8 years. I have almost 900 classes to my name. The problem is, I don't have the body type you envision when you imagine a personal trainer. I'm short and chubby, but I'm in great shape. I'm afraid gyms won't hire me over this fact, as well as clients not taking me seriously or believing I don't know what I'm talking about because I'm in a slightly bigger body. What do you ladies think? Would a slightly larger bodied person make you not want to take workout advice from them? Or would it be refreshing to see a different body type in the gym? Any advice or opinions are appreciated. You both are doing amazing things and inspire me weekly. Amy, 34, Nevada.
Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm amazing. Couldn't be better. How are you guys?
This is our special guest, Elise Lonan, today.
She's
here. So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Well, have you actually applied or are you still just contemplating this?
I'm still contemplating. I'm still in this kind of awkward place in my life where I'm trying to embrace the stay-at-home mom life a little bit, but it's already starting to get to me 1 year in. So I'm thinking of avenues to, you know, venture down. And I was thinking, what do I enjoy doing? And I really enjoy working out. I'm kind of the silly one in my friend group. And, you know, the coaches at my gym are really upbeat and fun and they like really get you into your workout. And I was like, I could do this. You know, I was a teacher for 10 years. I'm really good at being able to delegate my attention and everything like that. So I was thinking like, this might be something I could really do, but I'm worried about how I look. People might not take me seriously just because I'm not in the best shape, you know, when you just look at me, but I'm in the best shape for myself. But, you know, some people are really judgmental and I don't know if I kind of want to get an outsider's opinion just if they think that that would be an issue I would come across, basically.
I think you have to go for it. Okay. I think that that whole scene, I think the way that we equate health with an exterior representation is so profoundly and deeply flawed. Some of the least healthy people I know are walking time bombs. And I think we're at the beginning of this culturally, so I'm not going to say that it's going to be easy, but body diversity and different experiences of health have got to be present in places where we work on ourselves and work on our bodies. And think about, a lot more women look like you than they look like, you know, a tiny little spin instructor.
That's and, a good point.
Yeah.
I think there's a huge opportunity for you to attract people who are intimidated by a perfectly fit trainer. A lot of people, that turns them off because they feel like they're being judged by their trainer. So you have a whole group of women, especially moms, who probably feel that way and feel intimidated. So they can find somebody that looks a little bit more like them. It's, they're going to be a little bit more, I guess, you know, feel more comfortable, I would say, working out. I would think that would apply to a lot of people.
Yeah.
There's a group of people that want their trainer to look a certain way. Then there's a group of people that want to feel comfortable working out with somebody that makes them feel good about themselves.
Yes. 1,000%.
Yeah, that's what I was banking on too. I was like, you know, if I saw someone like me when I started out my journey with working out about 8, 10, 9 years ago, I think I wouldn't have been as intimidated. I kept putting it off. You know, I don't want to go to this gym. You know, it looks scary, but then I finally went and it was fun. But, you know, maybe if I did walk in and see someone that looked more like myself, maybe I would have been more inclined to start sooner. That's a really good point.
Yeah. And I think that's also how you sell it to someone when you're in a job interview.
Exactly.
It's like, when I walked in here,
that's
I wanted to
point.
See somebody who looked like me, like not just like a size 00. I wanted to see somebody who's like an average size
yeah.
person.
Without apologizing about your size.
Exactly.
You can
yeah.
advocate for what they may have their guardrails up about what they deem as somebody that can teach there. But mm-hmm. I also wouldn't even limit yourself to Orange Theory. Like, this is great marketing. I could already see like you marketing to women in your neighborhood and moms. Like, do other moms want to work out without being judged by everybody in the gym? Do you guys want to? And figure out fun ways to do that around the neighborhood, walking around or going to a park and meeting up. So it's not so that there's a fun vibe and there's kind of movement in the movement, not, you know, literally and physically, mm-hmm. like you're actually changing it up and offering different places to go or different activities. I think you could just not limit yourself to only thinking you can just fit yourself into somebody other's operation and potentially create your own business.
Have you
never thought of that?
Yeah, not that everyone needs to be a digital influencer, but I also wonder if you started making some content just for your friends and family, I think you would get a lot of positive reinforcement. It might be what you need confidence-wise to see the market for this and move into it. You don't have to keep doing it or build a profile, but
yeah,
I think you'd get a lot of feedback.
That's a yeah. really good idea. I didn't even think about. Thank you.
And I love what Chelsea said too. When my mom was like in her 50s, she and several of her friends started working out with a gal who was about your age. She'd built like a whole gym in her basement, which like depending on your weather situation, where you live, you know, basement, outside, whatever. But like that was where they loved to go because it was like a normal person with great equipment and they would go and have a great time and chat with the other ladies. And it wasn't like this like gym experience.
Yeah,
and we're our culture is awash with unattainable bodies. And if that's what people need in order to feel inspired, they have a plethora of opportunities mm-hmm. to feel bad about themselves. And no, but I think it would be revolutionary to disrupt mm-hmm. that narrative.
Agreed.
And to get comfortable with for people to see someone who's healthy, strong, and has a body that's attainable and equivalent is really powerful.
And I think exactly picking off of what Elise said earlier, make that part of your narrative too. Like how we define health has been misinterpreted for eons. And actually healthy and strong and physically fit are the most important things to be. It's not about being a size 0 or a mm-hmm. size 2. Especially not for everybody. People aren't naturally like that and
no.
you know, are forcing themselves. There are people that are naturally like that. Good for them. But that's not natural for most people. So I think you have a huge opportunity here too. So get going, get working.
Yeah. And I also like how when you had Ben Bruno on, he talked more about how women should be doing more like weight training, how we go straight for the cardio. And I was thinking, like, because that's where I found my passion. I used to hate lifting weights. And now it's like, I look forward to it. Can I beat my personal mm-hmm. record and things like that? And I want to get people excited like that and women excited about that, because I think there's a misinterpretation of, you know, lifting weights for women too. They don't want to look too bulky or whatever. And I'm like, that's not a thing. Like, that's not a thing.
Yeah. I also, this just kind of keeps popping into my mind too. You may want to talk to a therapist or somebody as well, just to see if there's some body dysmorphia stuff going on. Because if you're limiting yourself so much, like having this question about like, am I good enough to do this? Am I the right size to do this? There might be just some extra like body stuff that you need to work out with a therapist.
Oh yeah. I grew up with an almond mom, if you guys know the coin term. Yes. So I'm trying to work.
I grew up with an almond joy mom. So I have the opposite set of problems.
You got to trademark that, Chelsea. That's great. Almond joy mom.
I see a new commercial. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sometimes you feel like a nut. Sometimes you don't.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, this was all great advice, stuff I never thought of. So I feel inspired. Thank you. I really
feel awesome. Great. Well, job is here. Problem solved. Everybody
Problem
can
solved.
Go home now.
Problem solved. I will keep you updated on my future endeavors.
Okay, yes, good. Let us know the name of your gym when you start it.
Your mantra is think bigger. Think bigger.
I got to think of a gym name that has Nugget incorporated into it somehow. Like, you know, Nugget Fitness.
Nobody wants to work out with a Nugget, but you could call that Think Bigger too. Yeah. That's a good gym name. Think Bigger.
Think Bigger is a great name. We are like you have 3 CMOs right now doing your marketing plan.
Love it. Love it. Thank you. I appreciate your time. I really do. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for calling in.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye.
This is so fun.
Anything we want to expound on?
I ask her a question.
Oh yes.
Oh,
yes.
Okay,
would you like to ask me a question, Elise? I'm so sorry. How rude of me.
Well, we can take a quick break and we'll be back with more Elise and Chelsea.
Moms are more than the stuff they do for us. The laundry, cooking, and driving. And by the way, Dad should be helping with that stuff too. She's got a whole life outside of motherhood. This Mother's Day, give Mom her flowers. She deserves the best, and that's why Bouqs is giving you 25% off your entire order of farm-fresh flowers from Bouqs. That's short for bouquets. Here's what's great about the Bouqs company. Bouqs is different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano. Bouqs has modern designs and unique flowers that you cannot find anywhere else. Bouqs is simple. Go online, pick the delivery date, and you are done. Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mother. Order your Bouqs now. And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma. So go to Bouqs.com and use promo code Chelsea, C-H-E-L-S-E-A, for 25% off. That's Bouqs.com, promo code Chelsea.
Tired of hair removal tools that just don't cut it? Conair Girl Bomb gives you smooth, flawless results while putting you firmly in control. From achieving that silky smooth skin to boosting your inner confidence, Conair Girl Bomb is all about helping you elevate your self-care game. Whether it's creating a hype playlist, throwing yourself into a hobby, or scheduling some me time, self-care is important to keeping you feeling confident and empowered. It's time to take your hair removal routine to the next level. You can trust Conair Girl Bomb to get the job done right. Conair Girl Bomb gives you the secret weapons for achieving powerful results with ease. Designed with women in mind, these tools boast the Sassy Girl Bomb Grip for unparalleled handling and precision, along with professional-grade blades to deliver results that you used to only get from men's tools. No more compromising. So, to all you incredible women out there, treat yourself to a little Conair Girl Bomb magic. Don't settle for anything less than perfection. Elevate your grooming game with Conair Girl Bomb. Available now at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Lisa and home design icon West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of the two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary, indulges your senses, and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Lisa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Visit lisa.com/Chelsea to learn more. That's LEESA.com/Chelsea.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back.
Mm-hmm. We're back. Elise, did you have a question for Chelsea?
I sure do. Thanks for asking, Catherine. You have a fearlessness about you, and I'm assuming you've always been a brave person, but you are someone who says it anyway, right? You see something, you say something. Do you ever feel scared? And what do you do in those moments?
Scared of saying something?
Just of being who you are in the world.
Oh, I have fears, but everyone always asks me this question, and I take it as a compliment that people think I'm so fearless, I think. I'm not really sure. I haven't digested it fully because I don't feel fearless. I definitely feel brave,
yeah.
But I have lots of fears, and I make it my business to kind of work, push through, like, go, you can do it. Like, every time you get over a fear, the level of the confidence that you feel and the I think self-security is the biggest thing that I have. Like, I know I can depend on myself. I know I'm not going to let anything get too carried away, not for anybody else and not for myself. And that if someone asks me to do something, I have complete confidence in my competence.
Yes.
You know, as long as it doesn't involve technology, like anything emotional, any sort of traumatic thing, like I can help somebody and I can actually deal with it myself. But I think it's from stepping through fear over and over and over again. I think there's so many different nuances of fear and how that plays out in your life. You know, you can be fearful, you can live in fear, or you can just have a fear of certain things. You know, it depends how, and do you let it run you? And no, I do not let it run me.
Yeah. And how do you interrupt it in that moment? Or do you just feel it? Or do you have a practice?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very into like meditation for the past like 5 years. I've been really practicing meditation, and this isn't fear-based yes, it is fear-based. This is a good example then. Last week, I thought I got some bad news about something. I just looked at it and thought, oh, that's not good. Like, I was expecting more from this or a better outcome from that. And then I had a phone call, and that was based on my fear of not being good enough at delivering something, right? Like, I was like, wait, I thought I did a better job at that. They should have gotten more for that, whatever the net result of it is, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh, maybe I'm not doing a good enough job. And then I had a phone call assessing the information we got. And it turns out I did a fucking great job, right? Mm-hmm. It turns out everything was great. We did everything we set out to do. And it worked in many ways, multiple levels that I hadn't even seen yet until everyone got together and told me. But I chose to go down the negative route for some reason, and that's fear-based. Mm. That's because you think you're not good enough, you're not whatever. And I remember getting off that call and sitting with myself for about 20 minutes and saying, next time you do that, you need to recognize that A, you don't have all the information. B, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Why do you care so much about this specific outcome unless it's based on fear? And that needs to be identified in the moment, and then it's easier to deal with, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway, do we have time for one more question from a caller too? Unless, Elise, do you have any more questions?
So many.
Well, yeah, I just have one more email from Nicole. She is in her 40s. Dear Chelsea, I would love your opinion on a recent dilemma with our 13-year-old daughter. She and her friends are having a costume party and are all dressing in similar themes. Her costume idea was super cute. She was going to be the Queen of Hearts. However, when she showed me her inspiration, or aesthetic board, I was taken aback. We're talking corset, platform heels, miniskirt, thigh-high hose. To give you a little backstory of my daughter, she's very independent, self-motivated, and an incredibly smart eighth grader. She prides herself in making straight A's, even though I think she's too intense about it. And she's a terrific performer who's done musical theater since she was 7. She started her period in 6th grade, and her body changed almost overnight. She has big boobs, just like her mama. I have been very intentional about not body shaming my daughter. However, when she tried on the corset she bought, I was at a loss. I told her I thought it was inappropriate for her age, and she freaked out. She even said she wanted to dress slutty for the costume party and knows it's a cliche, but doesn't care.
While I appreciate her honesty and confidence, I just don't know how to tell her she shouldn't dress this way without making her feel ashamed of her body. Am I in the wrong here? How do I help her stay age appropriate and still love her body? Thanks, Chelsea. Nicole.
Well, Elise, I know you don't have any daughters, but you're the only parent here, so I have to let you go first.
Okay. I have a lot of feelings about this.
Okay.
So Peggy Orenstein, he's an amazing journalist. She was telling me a story about talking to a boy. She writes a lot about kids and sexuality. And he was talking about his girlfriend, and he said, she's sexy, but not sexual. And I thought that that distinction was so critical and key, because I think with a lot of kids, girls specifically, they are wanting to be sexy, and they are not yet really sexual. They don't have a full sense of their own sexual power. I don't know. Maybe they've all, maybe they're far more advanced than I was at that age. But I worry a lot about the performance of sexuality for an audience and the objectification when you don't even know yet what it is. And then, you know, I know that we're in a time where, which I respect, not slut shaming girls or talking about their bodies, body shaming them. But culturally, we are not there. We still live in a culture that is incredibly patriarchal, where of 1,000 sexual assault cases, only 25 ever progress to trial. It is not safe for girls. You are expected to be the babysitter of rapacious male desire. Whatever happens to you is your fault. This is the culture that we live in. And so I think not acknowledging that and pretending that it's all fair for girls is a gross disservice. So it's not about shaming her about her body. It's about making sure that she can keep herself safe. And I recognize that no girl should be responsible for keeping herself safe and that it's fucked up. But unfortunately, that's where we are.
I think you said that so beautifully. There's also, I know, Chelsea, you can speak to this too. There's also a shitty thing that happens when you have bigger boobs of like, you can put on the same exact dress as your friend next to you with small boobs. And like, you look quote unquote slutty. You look like you're trying to be more sexual than you're meaning to be because your breasts are larger. Like, that's definitely an experience I've had.
For sure. I felt that way too. But I also want to counter argue, like, I get all those things, and I understand you're saying everything you're saying is true. But I also think at eighth grade, a girl who has shown responsibility and shown good judgment should be given the right to make these kinds of decisions on her own and then see where that lands. Mm-hmm. Like, see, she's going to school, you know, like, hopefully that's a safe place for her to try to exercise her freedom in the way she wants to dress. And maybe she'll come back from that and be like, oh, I don't want it. I don't like that kind of attention.
Yeah.
Or I don't like the way people are looking at me. And maybe she won't. Maybe she'll come back and go, I liked that. I liked that a lot. But again, you can't control her experience with that. Like, at a certain age, especially the way girls dress now, they show everything.
I know.
At a young age, you know, the things that they're exposed to, and I agree with especially what you're talking about regarding sexuality and sexy, because I do think girls are more innocent these days. They're exposed to more on the internet, yet they have less experience in person, which is, I guess, you know, this has been a hot topic of conversation with boys and girls, adolescents and everything in between, and non-binary children as well. Like, you want your own agency. You want your kid to be able to make decisions and understand what those decisions lead to, especially something that I understand why you're asking, but overall, this seems pretty innocuous to me. I don't think it's a major big deal. You know, it's not like she's sexually active all of a sudden and you don't know how to handle that, because that's something that can also happen in the eighth grade. We're talking here just about an outfit, and it might be worth the experience of her wearing that to understand if she wants to wear something like that again.
Yeah.
Yeah. My sister calls that the natural consequences. She talks about this with her kids a lot who are now teenagers. Like, my niece Lucy, she wanted to wear high heels to school. And my sister was like, you know, the natural consequences of that are you can, but your feet are going to hurt at the end of the day. And of course, she came home with like terrible feeling feet and blisters and all this stuff. And it's like, that's the natural consequences. But yeah, letting her
go to school and see how she likes that attention.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's nice to give people some responsibility also, instead of parenting them at that age in that way. I think it's a good, like, that's a good self-esteem booster to kind of be, have your own, you make your own decisions on certain fronts to see how you make them.
Yeah.
And practice making them.
Yeah, I think that's all fair. And I don't want to be sound so puritanical. I just, like, any girl we can save from sexual
predatory behavior.
Predatory behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
But can we save anyone from that? You know what I mean? Like, can you really save somebody from that? I don't know.
I know. I think it's kind of both of these answers. It comes down to, like, is it a safe sandbox to be playing in?
Yeah.
Like, is she going to a safe place, or is she, like, going out into the city, like, not great, you know?
Okay, guys, this is your opportunity. The book is called On Our Best Behavior, The Seven Deadly Sins and the Price Women Pay to Be Good. It's written by Elise Lonin. Please order your books or go to your independent bookstores and buy a copy of this book. It is very important reading. Elise, thank you so much for
being here today. So fun.
It's so nice to talk to real people, right? And give advice. I love it. I love it. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
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 If you'd like advice from Chelsea, shoot us an email at dearchelseapodcast@gmail.com and be sure to include your phone number. Dear Chelsea is edited and engineered by Brad Dickert, executive producer Catherine Law. And be sure to check out our merch at chelseahandler.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Looking for hair removal tools that not only deliver smooth results, but also empower you with a sense of complete control? Enter Conair Girl Bomb, your secret weapons for smooth, sleek results, made just for women. From the ultimate Girl Bomb grip and professional-grade blades, you don't have to compromise and settle for less. Conair Girl Bomb equips you with the precision and power previously reserved for men's grooming tools. So take your hair removal routine to the next level with Conair Girl Bomb. Available at ConairGirlBomb.com or a retailer near you.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Leesa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Visit Leesa.com/Chelsea to learn more. That's LEESA.com/Chelsea.
Hi, Chelsea here. I think we all know that hair loss has the power to kind of shatter your confidence. Not kind of. It really shatters your confidence. And that's where Zion Health comes in. Founded by top doctors in hair restoration, Zion offers both medicated and non-medicated treatments for men and women with thinning hair. Guys, unless you do something or talk to someone, your hair loss will only get worse. I'm not kidding, unfortunately. So get your confidence back on track and visit Zion, XYONHealth.com to get support today. That's XYONHealth.com.